All right. What's up, podcast listeners? Thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 140 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed information and content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. Today, I'm joined once again by two-time Olympian Chad Vaughn. And today we're going to go over a topic that is near and dear to our hearts and something that we get asked about constantly over social media, which is, how do I squat deeper? And how do you do so consistently, especially with heavier weights? Because that's another thing that we see. And I'm sure many of you that are listening to this maybe also have the issue where you can get deeper at the start with some of your lighter weights. But then as you get heavier and heavier, and maybe you're going for a new one rep max, you always have to ask your friend, hey, did I hit depth? Did I get deep enough? That shouldn't be an issue that you have. So today, let's go over a simple three-step process that I teach all of my patients, all the clients that I work with, that Chad uses within his own programming about how to get that mobility and then how do you actually keep it. And it's a very simple three-step process. You're going to think mobility, stability, and then integrate. So here's what that means. We need to be able to get the mobility. We need to be able to address why was that mobility a deficit in the first place, which is often due to a lack of stability or ownership of that motion. And then we need to be able to integrate that new motion within the squat pattern with whatever barbell pattern you are using, whether that's a front squat, an overhead squat, a back squat, and for my Olympic lifters and my CrossFitters, your cleans and snatches. So let's first touch on briefly mobility. What are the main limiting factors in a deep squat? Well, when we look at the kinematics, the biomechanics of the body, the biggest limiting factors are going to be at your ankles and going to be at your hips. Rarely will I see someone come to me that has a limitation in knee mobility. Now, if you are maybe a master's level athlete, you've had some really bad knees over the years, or maybe you've had a knee replacement, sure, knee flexion or knee bend could be an issue that limits your squat depth. But for most people, the knee is not going to be your limiting factor. It's going to be able to hinge enough to be able to let you achieve that deep squat. Ankles are going to be a big one, and hips are going to be a big one. And the main reason why a lot of people lose mobility in this area, if you think about it, is sort of comes down to the, if you don't use it, you lose it. If you were to actually take a timer, and I ask people this constantly during our evaluations for this type of problem, and you were to time yourself, how often or how long do you think you're actually sitting in that deep squat during the day? So Chad, question to you, how long do you think you spend time in that deep squat on a daily basis? And this can be bodyweight squat alone, this can be barbell, everything combined. How often are you actually sitting in that deep squat?
Oh, that's a really good question. And for me, I would say it's probably more than most, but not as much as it could or should be. I mean, at least 3 to 5 times on a daily basis, I drop down into a squat and, you know, do something, pick something up or clean something, you know, whatever it may be. And I feel, you know, even with that warm up and stuff like that, fairly comfortable there, but that's just because I've spent so much time there with weight, you know, and any of my workouts that I do, which are, you know, usually 4 or 5 times a week, at minimum 3 times a week, there's a pretty lengthy detailed warm up where I'm doing different warm-up squat variations, pausing in the bottom for 3 to 5 seconds at a time. And then any squat day that I have, there's, you know, at least 5 reps, warm-up reps with long pauses in there with weight. You know, maybe I'm doing a squat workout with all pauses for the day. So I just did, my last squat workout was 10 seconds down, 10 seconds in the bottom for 5 sets of 1, you know, building up to a comfortable, heavy front squat. So you know, there's that time for me in the bottom throughout the day, which is, again, I could spend more time there. I could make a point to spend more time there, but there's also that time in the bottom, with weight. And I think probably most people aren't ever getting there with either of those. And that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. I would say most people, if you were to be very realistic and again, bring that stopwatch around throughout your day, most people are not spending much time at all. And if the only time you're ever squatting deep is when you're in the gym, again, because most people don't do enough full range of motion in pause squats. If you were to actually take that timer and spend time just in that bottom position, again, it's fractions of a second. And then we wonder why we're not able to see deeper squatting, because you're never taking your joints through that full range of motion. And especially when people get home from work, or maybe when they're at work all day long or sitting at school, you're never completely fully through those ranges of motion. You're sitting in a chair. And even then too, that's passive. Your muscles are relaxed. So you're not actively moving through those ranges of motion. So your body stops using that. But if you were to go to different areas across the world where maybe chairs aren't as prevalent, for example, you go to, I hear of people when they travel to China or places like that, and they're seeing people sitting at a bus stop in a deep squat. It's because they've never stopped using that full range of motion. So if we know where the problem lies, and that we have not spent a good amount of our time in the past couple of years or most of our life in that deep squat position, where do we start? Well, we need to mobilize the ankles. We need to mobilize the hips. Now, for anyone listening to this, if you go on my YouTube channel, Chad and I actually have a number of YouTube videos where we show full programs of how to test for those areas and a couple programs on how to enhance your mobility. I think there's one that's 10 minutes long. There's one that's 5 minutes long, but just type in squat mobility, squat university, Chad Vaughn, and you will find different programs that you can even start integrating into your daily mobility practice or as a warm-up before your training that will drastically help improve those areas. First thing is understanding what things do you need to concentrate on. And two simple tests that you can do straight off the bat is a 5-inch wall test for your ankles to see dorsiflexion, knee over toe, how much do you have. Stand next to a wall, put your foot a fist plus an extended thumb away, which is roughly 5 inches, drive your knee forward. Can you come close to it at all? If you're super far away, you know your ankles are at least one of your limiting factors. Now, it's not necessarily that we're looking for everyone has to hit the wall, but what we're first and foremost looking for is, are there big differences side to side, and are there big restrictions bilaterally? So if you have a big difference side to side, that could be a restrictor in your squat depth because your body would then end up twisting if you were to access that range of motion. And if you have a big side-to-side difference, obviously that's not going to allow knee over toe translation. And the more knee over toe you get, the deeper you can squat with a more upright chest. So if you have big ankle issues, it will limit your ability to squat deep. In the same sense, when you lay on your back and pull your knees towards your chest, how close can you get? Because if you can lay on your back and get your knee pretty close to your chest, you have sufficient hip mobility to be able to squat deep. However, you just may not be accessing it during your day-to-day for the following reasons that we're going to come with next. So again, understanding the mobility component, thinking mobilize first, go through those YouTube videos, check out the different things. I will say one more caveat to the ankles that not a lot of people have realized, but also something that Chad, you also have found very helpful, which is looking at tibia rotation. And there's a full video on my YouTube where we actually take Chad through this. Because of his mobility limitations on his one side with his ankle going knee over toe, if you were to look at his tibia rotation, he has more on that side to help make up for it and allow him to deep squat. So when we look at the ankle complex, it's not just a straight hinge joint like the knee. It doesn't just move forward and back. Obviously, that's the big movement that is taking place during a deep squat. So we call that sort of the gross kinematics. The bigger biomechanical movement is forward and back. However, there's an accessory motion that's also taking place called tibia rotation. So the tibia sort of rotates in and leans to the side. And that allows your hips to sort of squat right between your feet. And if you have a limitation in that rotational capability at the ankle, it will actually hinder knee over toe and hinder the full motion of that ankle joint to where it actually doesn't allow you to squat as deep. So tibia rotation is something that most people don't ever talk about. This is something that I've started integrating in my practice within the last couple of years, but I really didn't even talk about it too much when I first started Squat University. So it's not even a part of the Squat Bible, my first book. And I find that a lot of people that have squat depth issues, if this is one of their problems, they unlock that. They can get more knee over toe and squat deeper, but they've just never been shown how to test for it or even what it is before. So I know that's been a huge part of your squat mobility training is unlocking that tibia rotation. You do that as a warm-up, correct?
Yeah, well, Yeah, I again, tibia rotation is something that I just learned from you a couple years ago as well, and had no idea about it, and come to find out that's why I'm capable of what I'm capable of with the extreme limitation. And so going back to what you talked about with ankles in the test, you know, I would say that if you're like very limited in your ankle would be probably 2 inches or more from the wall. If you can get 1 inch, hey, you're almost there and you're probably doing pretty good. If you can touch the wall, obviously that's great. Some people can go beyond the wall, so that's, you know, a huge advantage, but 2 inches or behind is probably extreme, especially if you start getting into three and four. So my right ankle is about 4 inches from the wall, especially when I'm cold. If I warm it up appropriately, maybe I can get another inch, but it's about 4 inches away. My left side can go beyond the wall, so I can go probably about 6 inches in a 5-inch wall test. So there's that big imbalance there, and yet I can, my squat looks symmetrical, and it looks symmetrical because, you know, learning about tibia rotation from you and testing it, I have about 45 degrees of ability to turn my toe in a test, which is just you sitting down, knees bent, keeping your knee in the same spot. And that's a lot from the people that I've tested and the people that you've tested. We know that most people aren't at 45 degrees. They're closer to maybe like 20, you know, if they're doing pretty good. And if you're less than that, then you're, you know, 10 degrees, or if you can't even budge your toes in, then you're pretty limited either with mobility, or you just don't know how to use your tibias. But both of my legs have about 45 degrees. So what that means is that I'm able to keep my feet straight, you know, shoulder width stance, that's my stance. And I'm able to push my right knee outside of that straightforward block that I have. And I'm able to set deep because my knees are opened up. My hips are able to go further forward because my knees are opened up, and I'm able to push my knees around that straightforward block. So ankles are a huge advantage if you have good ankle mobility, but this tibia rotation is also a huge advantage in that you can overcome at least some or a lot of ankle limitation dorsiflexion wise if you have it. So it's definitely worth looking at, you know, to back up what you're saying there.
Yeah. So once you get your mobility, we then need to understand, well, why is that area tight in the first place? We talked about rarely are people ever moving through those full ranges of motion. So you lack movement competency. You lack the ownership of that motion. So some people can be very flexible, but yet have poor mobility because they don't have that control of the motion that they should have available to their body. So this is where the stability work comes in. And this is what I think a lot of people miss, because they do a lot of mobility work. I mean, obviously mobility has been sort of a very popular term within the fitness communities within the last decade or two. I mean, Kelly Starrett obviously popularized it with his mobility wad, movement mobility every single day. And you always hear about people like, what's your mobility routine? What's your mobility flow? But people don't talk about directly after, what are you doing to address the root cause of why that area becomes stiff in the first place? And I think that's where we need to then start stabilizing as well. And the partnership of those two allows you to not only get that motion, but also make sure that you're keeping it longer. Now, when we talk about stability, what instabilities could limit squat depth? Well, let's look at what needs to be stable. We need to have a stable foot. We need to have a stable knee, stable pelvis, and core control. And how we can do that are barefoot squatting and goblet squat holds. That's probably my favorite things that you can do directly after your mobility work. So get your ankles, get your hips mobilized, and then some slow tempo goblet squats just through a full range of motion. Get out of your shoes to actually feel what are your feet doing. Because if your feet are flopping around, unstable, collapsing over, it's going to hinder optimal ankle mechanics. So a lot of times you may have limitations in your ankles, not because they can't move enough, but because you are so unstable at your feet, your body is grabbing on for as whatever it can to keep itself from falling apart. You're not going to be able to access that new range of motion when you then get a barbell on your back. So some slow tempo goblet squats can be excellent, and hold that goblet squat sort of a little bit further out in front of your body. Work on stiffening your core and maintaining that proper brace as you get down into the deep squat and holding that position, making sure that you're breathing through that range of motion. Don't hold your breath the whole time. And this is going to be something that sort of integrates that core stability within a movement that's very specific to the squat. So a simple protocol would be get your mobility work. Let's say you're going to be doing some calf stretches where you're going to be putting your foot up on a bench, driving your knee forward, hold for 10 seconds. That's, you know, helpful for a lot of people to get that end range of mobility. They hold that for 10 seconds and they do five of them. And let's say their hips are pretty good. So they're just going to do their ankle mobility. Then they're going to grab a plate that may be a 10 kilo plate, a 20 pound kettlebell, and they're going to get out of their shoes and they're going to hold it in front of them. And they're going to do like a 10 second descent into a 30 second pause in that bottom position and just feel for being 100% balanced and accessing that full range of motion. You can shift around a little bit at the bottom to find your comfortable spots, but get used to staying in that bottom position, breathing with it, keeping your core engaged, making sure that your feet are fully balanced. And doing a few of those, you can go back and forth to superset. You are going to have much better range of motion when you then put that bar on your back because you've addressed those appropriately. So those are, I think, are going to be the most simple takeaways that people can, you know, use instantly into their squats. So we have the mobility, we have the stability, and then instantly we go to, well, how do I integrate this into my barbell training so that it sticks around? And Chad, I know this is your bread and butter, so I'm going to let you take this away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, first, I just wanted to back up a couple of things that you said there. You know, you talk about barefoot squatting or, you know, barefoot warming up. And the thing, going back to what you said in the beginning of how much time do you spend in the bottom of a squat? And if you click that stopwatch, most people are going to be at zero. You know, they're never going to be there at all. And so it's just over the years, you get more and more tight and away from being able to use that range of motion. But having tight ankles, that has to do with that. But also something that you have talked a lot about are the shoes that we wear, you know, and whether they're scrunching our toes together or whether they have elevation, which most shoes do. Like, most shoes aren't flat shoes or barefoot shoes. So like, over years, wearing those shoes that are scrunching your toes together and lifting your heels are weakening your foot. They're contorting your foot, and that's going to bleed up through the rest of your body. And the ankle is the first place that's going to take the brunt of that. And again, with that elevation, walking around all day and sitting down with those shoes on with your heels elevated are locking your ankles up too. So the simple suggestion here that, as Aaron mentioned, and I have all of my athletes do, I'm going to give you a 10 or 15 minute warm-up at the beginning of every single one of your workouts that's going to be squat centric, but it's going to be a good general warm-up for anything that you're doing. And that's kind of the big thing that I want people to understand. Just because we're doing a quote unquote squat warm-up doesn't mean that I'm not preparing and warming you up for everything else, because we're hitting, you know, every part of your lower body at least. And I'll hit your upper body with some other stuff that I'll give you too, but we're going to do that barefoot. We're going to do that barefoot because most people aren't barefoot enough. And by doing that, it's going to make your warm up a little bit harder. Meaning by the time you get through that process and put your weightlifting shoes on or whatever shoes you're going to wear in your warm up, it's going to immediately feel better and easier to you, but over time, collecting days and workouts with this 10 or 15 minute warm up, at least barefoot, is going to go so far for you. You know, if you do nothing else but that, and not even any mobility drills, I'm not saying that it's ideal or you're going to make change quicker, but like, getting in that habit and making that a routine is going to be huge for you. You will feel better going into your regular workout, and you will set yourself up to potentially make change. You know, if you're doing an ankle mobility drill, it's going to be better if you're doing it without your shoes on. You're going to be able to feel more. Also, you're going to be able to feel your foot on the ground and understand more what a stable foot really is, more than you would if you're just always using weightlifting shoes. So, you know, getting into the part that I'm going to talk about, I also want you to understand that we do have, as you mentioned, Aaron, sample warm-up sequences that follow these recommendations, one, barefoot, but also this combination of alternating between mobility drills and different warm-up squat variations, like goblet squat, as you mentioned. There's another one that I use all the time that I think everyone should be doing every day. It's just called a support squat hold. And that all that is you getting about a foot away from an upright, a solid upright that you can hold on to support yourself, but also reach low, close to the ground on that upright, on that pole, and pull your hips forward, and your ankles forward into the best position that you can get into. And that can help you get some time in the bottom of that squat, as we're suggesting, with support, and beyond. What I mean is, like, if you're pulling yourself into this position, you're going to be able to probably create a better position than you're used to. And again, if you're alternating back and forth between whatever mobility drill that you're using and that squat variation and other squat variations, that's going to go a long way for you. Also, don't be afraid to, even though you're warming up barefoot, don't be afraid to elevate your heels. You have to think of heel elevation, support squat, goblet squats, holding a plate out front, even front squats, even overhead squats as assisted squat variations. And what that means is, like, if you think about doing an air squat with no shoes on, barefoot, if you struggle with mobility in any part of your body, that air squat, if you're trying to squat deep and if you're trying to make it quality, is really the most difficult squat variation that there is, because a lot of athletes need assistance. They need weight. They need something to help force them and allow them to get into a better position. So we need a combination of all of these different forms of assistance to ultimately get you to where we need to go. And some of that can be lifting your heels with plates or whatever other surface that you can do, and progressing down over time, either within the same warm-up or over a longer period of time. You can also use elevation with your weightlifting shoes on, with lighter weights, lighter front squats, for example, to help you get into those better positions. And that's all about allowing your body the opportunity to feel what you want it to head towards. For example, if you only ever do air squats or front squats with weightlifting shoes on without elevation, and you are limited to a certain depth, you know, your body's only ever going to know that depth and quality unless you do something different, unless you use some other form of assistance that adds to that. So there's where you can elevate your heels so your body can feel a more upright, solid, and deeper position so that it actually knows where to go. Otherwise, you know, if your body doesn't ever know what feels better, or what that's like, or what it feels like, you know, you're going to struggle to be able to find that. So all of these different variations that you can use. And again, we have samples on YouTube videos and blog posts that we've written as well. But the base of all this, and, you know, getting into doing this with some of your weighted warm-up sets, is really adopting and maintaining a new standard. So when you talked about doing this recording, Aaron, I got excited because I love talking about squat depth, and I want everybody to squat all the way down to their end ranges, especially if they're trying to be the best they can at Olympic lifting. But I'm just excited that more people are wanting to squat deeper, you know, but I still think that probably the majority of those people, even though they say they want to squat deeper, they don't know how deep they should go. They don't understand, like, if they are, or if they should get to their end ranges. And from my perspective, yes, over time, if it takes time, you need to develop into this, but it all starts with whether you're warming up or whether you're trying to incorporate it into your weighted squats. It's adopting a new standard, understanding what that standard is, which is full depth end ranges. Like, if you're doing a 10 second pause, like, are you truly sitting on your end ranges, or are you holding yourself up with your quads? And so there's a difference there, feeling that out. And again, the support squat is something that can help you do that, because you have this assistance where you can hang on to something and really relax your quads into that, what's essentially a seated position. What you explained earlier, that, you know, a lot of people from different countries are doing, which, by the way, the shoes that they're wearing are probably better than the shoes that we're wearing. So they have that advantage as well. But adopting and understanding the standard and then maintaining it by doing the warmups that we're recommending for you to do, making sure that you're getting as low as you can go there, using whatever form of assistance that you need to have the quality that we'd like to see. And by the way, you know, when I talk about quality, and when I talk about the ability of the athletes that I come across and the athletes that I see, for someone to not be able to find a squat variation that they can use to show me enough quality is rare. So, like, it's an extreme case to say, like, okay, this person is so tight and so bad off in so many areas that we need to do something special. We need to do something different, like squat down to a box or a ball and then work on their mobility and progress down over time. Like, I'm usually able to find a variation, either a certain amount of elevation or a goblet squat or a form of squat that they can use in their warmups to get down as low as they can possibly go and have sufficient quality, meaning not completely caving and rounding in their back. So just keep that in mind. Most athletes, I feel, are going to be able to find at least one or two squat variations that they can use and build on. But adopting and maintaining this new standard and going through that warm-up, and then when you get to, especially if squats are your first warm-up, I'm sorry, your first exercise for the day, then go ahead and leave your shoes off. Go barefoot for the first two or three sets as you're building up in weight. And now if you're going to be putting your weightlifting shoes on for your heaviest ones, you want to put them on pretty quickly and you want to, you know, start feeling some of those lighter weights with your weightlifting shoes on. But it's the same thing. You're going to get added bonus and benefit from squatting without your shoes. Along with squatting barefoot for your first two or three warm-up sets, I want you to add a 5 to 10 second pause on about half of your warm-up reps. So what this might look like, just as an example, you do a set with the bar. Let's say you're doing front squats. You do a set with the bar. Let's say let's do 5 reps. Let's pause for 5 seconds on rep number 2 and rep number 4, something just simple and straightforward. Let's put about 35% on the bar. Let's say if you're going up to your workout for the day is 80% for 3 sets of 3, just for example. So let's go 35%. You'll do 5 reps there. Let's again pause for 5 seconds on rep 2 and rep number 4 again. Let's go 50%. Let's go 3 reps. Let's pause for 10 seconds on rep 1. And I'm just throwing out random numbers here, but the point is trying to accumulate pause reps for about half of your warm-up set. So 50%, you'll still be barefoot. You'll go 10 seconds on rep number 1 and then regular on rep number 2 and rep number 3. And the point with that is, one, to get you time in the bottom, but also to try to find that same depth on rep number 2 and rep number 3 that you did on rep number 1 when you pause for 10 seconds. Because if you're pausing for 10 seconds, even with 50%, yeah, you can hold yourself up and not go to your end range, but it's going to be harder to do so. You're going to get tired, your leg, your quads are going to start burning if you're not relaxed in your quads and truly seated on those end ranges. And the more you do that, the more workouts that you do with that, the more likely you will be able to relax and understand and feel where that end range is. Let's go ahead and put your weightlifting shoes on and do 50% again. Let's do 3 more. Again, 10 second pause on rep number 1, regular on rep number 2 and rep number 3, and just be aware of how much easier and how much better that set felt with your weightlifting shoes on versus all of the warmups that you did before you started front squatting and those first few front squat warmup sets as you built up in weight. And again, if you try it one day where you do your entire warmup with your weightlifting shoes on and then a day without, you're going to feel so much difference in that first set that where you actually have weightlifting shoes on. Like there is, it's like, it feels like you're cheating almost, which is a great thing. So use that to your benefit and collect those reps over time. But let's go up to 60%. Let's do 3 more reps. Let's go 10 seconds again on rep number 1. Let's go 70% for 2. Let's go 5 or 10 seconds on rep number 1. And then let's get to your working sets where you're doing, your 3 sets of 3 regular, no pauses. Now, if you're on a program where you have pauses, great, you know, keep them in on the 80% or have those in there. And I've got a lot of programs that incorporate pauses in your working sets just for the purpose of stability and strength in that bottom position. And also, you know, making it harder for you to stand up from nothing, which is important as an Olympic lifter. You're not always going to catch your cleans and, you know, just come right out of the bottom. There's going to be times where it's off and you have to adjust a little bit and you need insurance standing up. If you make the decision to do entire squat cycles barefoot, that's not a bad idea at all. Aaron, since we've been working together, been writing your program for, I don't even know how long, 2 or 3 years now, maybe 3 years at this point. You've done all of your squat cycles barefoot. Now you've done some front squats with your weightlifting shoes on because that's more specific to the clean, but any back squats that you've done, like we've done every entire squat cycle that we've done, you've gone barefoot and we've seen so much benefit from you out of that. Huge like changes. Your bottom position, one, without weightlifting shoes is better and more solid and stronger because you've spent so much time in the bottom barefoot. But when you put your weightlifting shoes on and you clean or you front squat, like it's just like, it's butter. Like it's, 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 It looks so good and it feels so good to you because you've spent all this time barefoot. Now, you don't have to go to that extreme if you want to. And if you have the mobility and the capability to do so, do it. It's going to strengthen your foot, your entire body. Everything is going to be great. But at least follow these simple recommendations. I say simple, but these recommendations of doing your entire general warm-up barefoot and a couple of your warm-up sets. Honestly, it can be with any exercise that you have first. So whether it's squats or snatches, do your first couple snatch sets barefoot, cleans, deadlifts, clean deadlift, snatch deadlift, whatever other exercise you're doing, you can benefit from doing the first couple sets barefoot as well.
There we go, guys. So quick and hopefully a very helpful podcast for you guys today. I've got to run because I've got some patients coming into the clinic in just a minute. So I hope you guys got something out of this. Before you guys leave, if you are looking for any Olympic lifting specific programming help, Chad and I have a few programs that you can download on trainheroic.com that not only can help build your snatch, your clean and jerk, and your squat, but also has some excellent programming for mobility and technique like we talked about today. So just head over to Train Heroic Marketplace and search Squat University. Back to Basics is one of them, but we also have a live program subscription through Train Heroic as well that you guys can keep up. Again, that has all of this amazing programming with mobility and stability work. So there's no guessing. You can follow along with that programming and see how your performance can take off. So again, thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. Until next time, guys, happy squatting.